As a child, I rather fancied the future as a colorful megalomaniac.
Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hi. Hey, everybody.
All right, so we are going to be reviewing Kingsman: The Secret Service this week, but to kick things off, we want to talk about the Oscars a little bit, and specifically our Oscar misses, things that we wanted to get nominated that didn't get nominated, so we won't be rooting for them, I guess, on Sunday night. And we are going to start off with Angie's pick.
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, with the Oscars finally here, I wanted to take one more moment to look back and shake my fist a little bit at the things that I had wished were getting more attention. One thing that I was kind of upset didn't get nominated was Gillian Flynn's screenplay for Gone Girl. I don't know how that didn't get nominated, to be honest with you. Like, I just thought that everything about it was so great. You know, David Fincher is not someone that I really think of as being good about, you know, telling stories from a female perspective or anything, but she brought so much to that. She brought so much to that movie. She's also someone who adapted her own book and made it really work for the screen by changing the things that she needed to change, which is a lesson that some authors, E.L. James, could stand to learn.
I totally agree with that. And like, yeah, I was bummed. My pick is that I think it's criminal that Essie Davis didn't get nominated for Best Actress, because as if you watch our show, you know that all of us are obsessed with The Babadook because it's so good. And in it, I thought that she gave a really incredible, like, I'm talking like Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs level performance, but it's actually DQ'd because the Oscar has these backwards concepts of what's eligible. And basically, if something played on television during the year, then it's ineligible. And Babadook was available on VOD. So when you watch the Oscars, keep that in mind, that there are all these little things that can kind of screw it up.
We could go on and on about that topic for a while, but do you mean just specifically before it finishes its theatrical run on TV?
I guess it plays on television before the year is out. I'd have to check the
because
specifics.
I know no, I think certain things were available on Netflix.
No, I think it's that a movie has to open in theaters before it plays on home video or on TV.
Definitely could have happened to The Babadook. Maybe if it's like a day and date release on both.
Yeah, it was basically something about their TV availability that like DQ'd it. So like,
which
it
is
was
such an antiquated policy now, considering VOD is what's keeping the independent film industry afloat to a degree.
I mean, of course, yeah. The Oscars are ultimately about enhancing ticket sales and getting people into theater. So on one respect, they get it, but on another respect, where if they want to continue to be like, it's just hard to respect the Oscars when they have so many obstacles to taking them seriously.
And like, isn't a big thing with the Oscars, they always want to reach out to younger audiences too? And aren't more younger audiences nowadays going to VOD? I mean, I could already name dozens of movies I've only seen this year because they were available at home and I just felt like watching something at home. But I guess that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know the specifics on exactly. I know it was the TV thing got to get DQ'd, and that is dumb because Essie Davis deserved all the acclaim.
She does. Yeah. And as does that movie in a number of different categories. Cinematography. And music.
And sound. Right.
I could go on and on about that. All right. Anything you want to add, Christy? All right. So my pick is Jake Gyllenhaal for Nightcrawler. I was just really sad that he didn't get. I get really sad when the things that I want to win don't get nominated at all. Like, it's one thing if they get nominated and they lose, because at least I still have something to root for that night. But I was really just bummed when he didn't even get a nomination.
I was shocked.
I was shocked, too. I mean,
wasn't shocked because if you've been watching the other awards races coming up to that, it was pretty. And, like, you know, the people trying to predict it, it was pretty clear that he was, like, no one would be amazed and shocked if he got nominated, but also most people weren't assuming he would.
I think the problem with Jake Gyllenhaal's nomination was the surprising success of American Sniper. I think Bradley Cooper took a spot. Because the other ones I thought were pretty much guarantees, even though I don't think Steve Carell deserves that. I think Steve Carell's character in Foxcatcher was a supporting character. And if anybody from Foxcatcher got nominated in the Best Actor category, it actually should have been Channing Tatum. I wish he was getting a little more love, because his performance, to me, made the movie much more so than Steve Carell's. His was kind of like a fun shtick to watch. But that was pretty much it. But if Jake Gyllenhaal was in the category amongst all of the ones who actually got nominations, I would still be picking him to win. But now that he's not in there, I want Michael Keaton to win. Sorry, Eddie Redmayne. I like you, but...
Well, yeah, fully back Michael Keaton.
Now every time I say Eddie Redmayne's name, all I can think about is Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah, that I feel like that's... I feel like that's going to be with all of us for a while.
All right. So that is it for our hot news topic of the week. And now we're going to move on to our big review, which is Kingsman: The Secret Service. And here is the description of that movie. A spy organization recruits an unrefined but promising street kid into the agency's ultra-competitive training program just as a global threat emerges from a twisted tech genius. That was actually a pretty good one. I loved this movie. This is probably, I saw this movie for the junket back in December, and had this movie come out last year, it might have come close to coming into my top 10 just because I had so much fun watching this movie. Like, there are certain things maybe I could pick on, but in terms of just, like, sheer entertainment value, this thing is just so colorful and wild, and Matthew Vaughn just goes for it in every single respect, and I think that's why it works a lot better than most movies that try to pull a similar thing off.
Yeah, I mean, he's not shy, he's not trying to be subtle, he doesn't hold back. I love that. Seeing Colin Firth, who's like always just kind of like the well-mannered, like Mr. Darcy type, be a badass was amazing.
And he was a really effective badass. Like, that trick scene is insane.
Yeah.
Did you see some of the behind the scenes stuff for that church scene? It's just incredible how they shot that. How much of that was shot in sequence? Like, obviously there's hidden cuts in there, but like during the interview he was explaining that they put certain hidden cuts in there because if you look in that scene, certain like background actors are playing different characters and are getting beaten up at different points, which I found really interesting. But one of my favorite things about his performance in that scene, and maybe it's because Taken just came out, we have another Liam Neeson movie coming out. I don't know how, like Colin Firth, much younger than Liam Neeson, right?
Colin Firth is, I looked this up, I feel like he's in late 50s, early 60s. And I'll look it up. Keep going.
All right. Well, like, assuming that I am correct and Colin Firth is just a little bit younger than Liam Neeson, it just amazed me how well he sold it all. Like, I totally believe that Colin Firth could kick ass. And that church scene kind of proves it because there's so much of that that you kind of can't cheat. He can't throw a punch and then you cut to the guy falling on the floor. He does all that stuff. So he deserves some serious credit for the stunts he did in this.
He is 54, which makes him, yeah, he's 8 years younger than Liam Neeson.
Okay.
But, like, he does look like an older gentleman, and then all of a sudden he's like, blah, 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 blah. But, like, for me, I think my favorite action sequences were just watching Gazelle, who is this,
How
like...
How cool is she?
She's really cool. She's this
Have you ever
character.
Seen her Nike commercial?
I have not.
Go look up, go Google Sophia Boutella Nike commercial. That is, like, one talented lady right there.
Well, what's really cool is that they took the concept, like, I mean, Kingsman plays a lot like a Bond movie gone bonkers, and she's basically the odd job or the Jaws, where she's the evil sidekick who has a weird anomaly about them, but hers is that she has like the Blade Runner legs, but the way they design the Blade Runner legs, they are like weapons where they're super sharp and have a spike that kind of makes it look like it's like a futuristic high heel. It's a really neat concept that I was going nuts for every time we watched it, because they really made her an exciting and like adversarial villain where, you know, when she fought people you were just like, oh damn. Like,
and she
wasn't
even just like any old villain, and she wasn't just his sidekick. That was one of my favorite parts about the whole Gazelle Valentine relationship, was that she wasn't like his little love interest. She didn't just like follow him around. I felt like he looked at her as his equal, and like he knew that he needed her in order to complete his mission.
No, I disagree. I actually, sorry, Christy.
No, go ahead.
One of the problems I had with the movie, I guess this is as good a way to segue as any, is it's not great about its treatment of female characters. Like, Gazelle, I am so with you guys. Like, she's so fun to watch. Like, Sophia Boutella is a fucking badass, and I could have just watched her, like, beat the shit out of people for 2 hours. However, her character really doesn't have any agency or inner life or motivation. It was never clear to me what she's getting out of this relationship with Samuel Jackson. It's not a romantic relationship, but just,
well,
you know,
but he does swat
her
in the ass whenever she does something he likes. Like, he gives her a little, like, yeah, buddy. And I was just kind of like, okay. Like, that muddied the water for me, because in one point I was like, so is she the loyal sidekick that agrees with his ideology, or is she the girlfriend? Like, I don't feel like I, you know, quote unquote strong female character, I don't feel like I knew her as a person at all. but I liked the action sequences. And
that
that's
was
kind
the
of...
case with a lot of characters, though, in this. And that, I think that's just, that's kind of like something you have to take in order for them to pull the spectacle off. Like, I don't think this would have been as much
that,
fun
though,
if they had started going Eggsy, into
and
that.
We learned a lot about Galahad.
And that's why those characters work so well. But if we started to learn all of that stuff about, like, Merlin and Roxy, eventually the whole, the pace, I mean, that's one thing about this movie that I think is above and beyond the large majority of other movies like this, is that it never stops for a second. And I think it's because the action keeps going, and they do pick the right times to give you some exposition and backstory, and you just can't do that with everyone.
I'm not asking for everyone, but I mean, like, you know, they set up, there's only three female characters in the whole film. And you really don't get to know who they are at all. And it's just kind of distracting whenever you're looking at the film in a grander scale behind. Spectacle-wise, Kingsman is super bonkers and super fun. But then when I actually try to sit down and parse apart the politics, it was a little more, it was less fun for me because I don't think that Matthew Vaughn has a coherent message. But, like, the female characters don't have a lot of inner life to them and become pretty big stereotypes, especially the mom who is just, her husband dies and she becomes like a beaten, sad woman.
The only thing keeping her afloat before was that she was like married to the right guy, I guess. Her only role in this movie is to be abused. But speaking of the politics, another thing that I found, and I want to emphasize that I did enjoy this movie and I'm completely with you about how like bonkers and fun it is. But then when I got home, I started thinking about like, what is this movie trying to say? And I was just like, it has some really weird muddled messages. It's really weird about class issues for one thing. Like the whole time the movie keeps being like, oh, anyone can be a Kingsman as long as you're like, you know, it doesn't matter where you come from. But it's a movie that where like when the hero finally completes his journey to becoming the hero, the way that it's marked is by him turning into a carbon copy of Colin Firth, who's a rich guy. Almost all of the poor people in this movie are treated as just like awful people. Like you know, his mom is her, the only thing that she does is be abused. All of like the, you know, her boyfriend and all of his friends are terrible people. In that church scene we're talking about, which I agree was so fun, all of the victims are like lower class Americans that the movie, and you're supposed to like not feel that bad that a gazillion people died because they're all kind of like, oh, they're poor and they're, you know, hicks.
Well, also because they say the most hateful stuff ever, which bugged me a little because it just felt such an easy out where it's literally like they use the N-word, they call gay people the F word, and it just becomes this thing where like, no, I get it, they're terrible people, so we can just enjoy the violence. And like,
yeah, exactly. It's a way that the movie excuses it, and it's just, and it's notable that, you know, in that moment we're trying to watch a bunch of rich people control the fates of a bunch of you know,
especially because the main villain is a billionaire who essentially,
Christy,
we're getting into spoilers, but I mean, like, the whole plot of the movie is very confusing in that it's trying to argue the kind of Ratatouille theme of great people can come from anywhere, but then in the end it seems that only people with incredible wealth can actually change the world, which is kind of depressing.
Yeah, I mean, the only people who have any power in this movie are people who have money or who, like Eggsy, kind of move up the class ladder as the movie goes on.
I guess those are all very fair points, but it just in terms of getting into the action and having fun with it, like, those are things that just, like, never crossed my mind until I thought about it after and don't take away from the fun of the movie in the least.
Oh, I agree. I mean, like, I still had a lot of fun with the movie. I'd totally watch it again. It doesn't take away from the fact that those action scenes are incredibly well done and, like, you know, the movie is so funny and energetic in a way that, and really creative in a way that a lot of Hollywood action movies aren't. It's just that, you know, then when I tried to dig a little bit deeper, I was like, it's got some really strange things to say.
Yeah,
I think I got wrapped up
a little
more
disappointed in just the final action scene, which I'm not going to get into specifics because we're not in the spoiler section yet. But just because to avoid MPAA R rating, they go real weird.
Oh, actually, I want to talk about the rating. This is an R-rated movie in which there is.
It is R. Then why is that? Okay, go on. Sorry.
Wait, it's not R?
It is R. But that's okay, like, if so it's rated R, then why the super cartoonish violence?
Well, it's an R-rated movie in which I don't even know how many people die. It's got to be in the thousands. And you see, like, maybe a cup of blood total. It is amazing how little blood there is in this movie. I don't think this is a spoiler because it's one of the first scenes. But in one of the scenes, you see a man literally get cut in half. And then they clean it up just by, like, tossing a white sheet over it. And the sheet doesn't even get bloodstained. And I was just like, I'm not demanding gritty realism from this movie, but
no,
that just seems like a really weird...
I assumed it was PG-13 based on the fact that there's no realistic blood to speak of. And now that I realize that it is rated R, I'm confused by the ending.
I feel like I've probably seen more blood in, like, Pixar movies. There's, like, well, no blood in this. It's
maybe
so
they could do more takes if there's no blood.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
Practical, I
guess. Well, but I mean, in the ending, that's all CG.
Well, yeah. All that stuff is. I mean, I guess like they could have put some blood in post if they wanted.
Yeah. Are we ready to move into spoilers?
Yeah, I think it's time.
Does anyone else have anything non-spoiler to say about the movie before we move on?
I was going to say puppies, but I guess that'd be talking about a spoiler.
Oh, okay. We could talk about that in the spoiler section.
Okay.
All right, so we're moving to spoilers now, everyone.
Yeah, so what I'm talking about specifically is that in the end, you see a bunch of people's heads literally explode, but they explode in, like, colors, like blue and orange and stuff.
They're pretty, actually.
It is pretty, but it makes it look like everybody is made of, like, I don't know, Jones soda or something.
Wait, are you not? I mean, I am.
I bleed Jones soda.
Perry, you're made of Jones soda, right?
Obviously.
Yeah, Christy, I think it's just you.
We really need to get Jones soda sponsoring the show, apparently. So, yeah, it was just something that kind of took me out of it, where I thought we had done all these cool, very adult things where you're playing with all these spy conventions and you have a kind of sassy, dirty vibe and there's a lot of fun violence. And then to just have the end be a literal explosion of weird, colorful gore took me out of it.
To me, that fits so well. I think they just perfectly, like, nailed the tone of it up to that point where I almost, like, expected it to go crazy like that. And it's so beautiful. That's one of the best things about this movie, too, is that everything is so freaking pretty.
I super like the fashion, which they actually have a fashion line,
like,
for Kingsman.
Holy shit, Samuel L. Jackson
no,
in this movie.
No, they do. We've
actually barely touched on him. He is one of the best parts in this movie, and he has so much freaking fun with this role, and I could have watched him playing this character. Like, the movie could have been about him and I would have been very happy.
Yeah, I generally liked it. I feel like I want to talk about a joke though that's gotten a little bit of backlash in that I didn't even hear there was backlash about this joke until I heard the director respond to the backlash. Essentially, and again, we're in spoilers, but I don't feel like this is super spoiler anyway. In the movie, there's a princess who is kidnapped, and when Eggsy goes to rescue her, he cheekily says in his suit, like, you know, something along the lines of, like, if I rescue you, can I get a kiss? And she basically says, like, if you rescue me, you can get backdoor action. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially. And some people were offended by this joke and said it was sexist because it takes this woman into this really unrealistic zone where she goes from being a person who's been kidnapped for days and just being like, yeah, let's get some. And also that it basically turns her into a trophy instead of a person, which is, it's disappointing. But it was one of those things where I was like, oh, that's annoying, whatever, and kind of moved on with my day, didn't really let it bother me. Also, it's the espionage genre, which kind of has a lot of inherent sexism because of Bond, so I just didn't give a shit. But then Matthew Vaughn got asked about it, and he complained about bloody feminists, quote-unquote, calling him a misogynist and overreacting and how they don't have a sense of humor, and he said, I just thought it would be great to turn it on its head by having the woman say it. I actually think it's empowering. Some bloody feminists are accusing me of being a misogynist, and I'm like, it couldn't be further from the truth. It's a celebration of women, and women being empowered in a weird way in my mind, which I'm sure will cause a big argument again. But it's meant to be tongue-in-cheek and crazy. And, like,
it reminded me of Zack Snyder and Sucker Punch all over again, where he was like, no, I have a bunch of, like, pretty women, like, scantily clad and being strippers, and it's actually empowering. I mean, you feminists just don't get it. And I feel like it's one of those, like, the cover-up is worse than the crime things, where, like you, when I saw it in the movie, I was like, okay, whatever. You know, it's a dumb joke. I rolled my eyes. And I moved on with my life. And then he tried to tell me, not me personally, obviously, but he tried to be like, it's actually empowering. If you don't get that, then you're wrong. And that just made me so much madder. Because I do think that there's a way that you could have done that joke that would have been subversive or funny. This wasn't it. This was just like, oh, you know, we're going to amp it up to 11 by instead of having her offer vaginal sex, she's going to offer anal. We're hardcore.
It's actually one of the only things that took me out of a great action sequence in this movie is because, like, I did stop to think, because I found that a little strange to just blurt out of nowhere. But, like, in terms of his response, not the best response you could have given, but at the same time, when you're asked a question like that, I feel like there's no good way out of it. Like, there's so few proper answers he could have given.
I think there, one, first off, he's done interviews before, so he understands how those things work. Two, it was Entertainment Weekly, so I feel like they're not going to, like, surprise him with shocking shit. And three, like, he follows up by saying that 80% of people laugh at that joke and, like, 20% don't like it. And, like, I feel like he could have just been like, look, I meant for it to be a fun turn on Bond, which he did say. But then by going, like, bloody feminist and, like, it's empowering, like, that's where you lose me. Like, don't make this about how I took your joke wrong and how dare I. And, like, it's just settle down. Like, you know, it's a sexist joke. And that's not inherent. Like, that doesn't mean he should have to feel, like, attacked. But, like, to turn it around and be like, how dare you be offended?
It just, yeah, it, like, I was tweeting about this, and it's like, look, if you're going to make a sexist joke, fine. Like, so many movies I watch have sexist jokes, and I manage to enjoy them anyway, but it just, I found it so much more obnoxious that he then tried to be like, oh, but you're, like, not allowed to be offended, because it's actually empowering. If you were smart as me, you'd understand that. But we should actually... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, the thing is, like, the current wave of feminism we're in is sex positive, and, like, I don't think women should be shamed for choosing to show off their bodies, but that, like, choosing to show off your body and choosing to be sexual and having a character complicit in her own objectification, those are different things.
Yeah. But in sum, I think we should probably wrap up. I know that we've just spent the last 5 minutes complaining about a lot of our issues, but I actually think overall this is a really fun movie, and... I mean, if you liked, for example, Kick-Ass, which is very similar in style, then you'll love this one.
I think this is actually above and beyond Kick-Ass. I can't wait for the second one. I love the idea that they would introduce an American branch of Kingsman. I think that's a great way to explore and just, like, make this world even bigger. I'd love to see how the branches work together. And just a way for you to kind of, like, put into perspective how much I love this movie, it deals with dog death, and I still want to see it again and again and again. So go see this movie.
The dog doesn't die.
Yeah, I feel like we're in spoilers, and I actually said to somebody, I was like, look, in case you know, you should know the dog doesn't die, because I was afraid they wouldn't see it or be freaking out.
I was getting real, because I was loving it, and then all of a sudden that came up, and I'm like, holy shit, that's just going to be it.
I actually knew the dog wasn't going to die because you liked the movie.
Yeah.
So watching it, I was like, it's fine. That dog's going to be fine, because Perry didn't go like, I liked it too.
My reaction spoiled it.
Yeah, but I like the movie overall. I do think that I think this stuff keeps it from being a great film or a particularly complex film, but it's really fun as an action movie. It's a really good time to go see with friends. And we didn't get to touch on this, which is a bit of a disappointment on our part, I guess, but Taron Egerton is great as a new talent, and he's really exciting and really fun, and I would really like to see him in more things. He was delightful.
He's a very natural lead actor.
Yeah.
He can definitely carry a movie. I was a little disappointed when he didn't get that X-Men role.
Vaughn, for whatever his faults, he has a really good eye for talent. Like, he's, you know, Jennifer Lawrence in X-Men, and Michael Fassbender in X-Men, and Aaron Taylor-Johnson in Kick-Ass. Like, oh, and even Daniel Craig in Layer Cake. Like, the guy gets it, and he picks really interesting people to, like, bring into the world of film, and I'm excited for this. I like it. I didn't love it.
All right, so let's move on to our last section of the show, which is our game section, and this week it's Oscar theme. Christy, you want to jump into it?
Yeah, so we're going to start off with a winner from last week. Last week we asked you, what has less sexual chemistry than Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan? And our winner is Sarah M, or at Sarah Jo Smiley, who said, me and every man I've ever met? I like that, Sarah. So thank you so much for playing. And this week, we have another question for you instead of a caption, because it's the Oscars. And kind of inspired by our wanting to talk about things that we wish had gotten attention, we want you to make up your own Oscars. So if the Academy came to you and said, you get to decide an Oscar category and even tell us who you think should win it, let us know what you'd pick. For me, it would be, you know, the fucking Meryl Streep Versatility Award, and it would go to Tilda Swinton, because she was all over the place this year with Only Lovers Left Alive and Snowpiercer and Zero Theorem, and I'm forgetting one, Grand Budapest Hotel. And she is just completely unrecognizable in every film. She also was in A Box sometime this year. I think Tilda Swinton just deserves all the Oscars, so that would be my excuse. So reach out and tell us on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco, what Oscar you would like to see and who you'd like to see it given to this year.
All right, so that is a wrap on episode 54 of Popcorn Prosecco. Like Christy said, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Facebook, Popcorn Prosecco. We have our own website, popcornprosecco.com. You can watch us on YouTube and on iTunes, and be sure to rate us, like us, comment, all of that good stuff over there. And, of course, the three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, do you want to take it first?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KRISTYPUCHKO, and you can find my career highlights, because I'm writing all over the internet, at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find my writing at slashfilm.com, and I am, oh my god, I don't know what just happened, I had a brain fart, and I tweet at AJHan, A-J-H-A-N.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is... I like felt like I needed to have a brain fart to make you feel better, but like then I almost did stutter, and I'm like, shit. At PNemiroff on Twitter. So that's a wrap on this episode. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Oh, and go to vanityfair.com. I helped them make bingo cards, so you can play along at the Oscars.
That is sick.